Bruce Mismore served with Rex Tillerson of ExxonMobil on the U.S.-Russia Business Council's board of directors and respected him. Tillerson, in turn, had gotten to know Khodorkovsky. It was obvious that ExxonMobil had become a leading partner in the Bush administration's Russia oil initiative, which might bring the Kremlin into alignment with a sale of Yukos shares. Mismore was aware, however, of the rumors about Khodorkovsky's political ambitions in Russia and of his rivalry with Putin, that he might even be planning to challenge Putin or his successor for the Russian presidency. It would be difficult to negotiate with ExxonMobil if Khodorkovsky intended to move openly into political competition with Putin. One Monday afternoon, Mismore asked his boss about that possibility. He thought Khodorkovsky would be a great president of Russia, he said. But what would it mean for Yukos? Khodorkovsky said he could never run for president, for two reasons. He was perceived as an oligarch who had stolen his fortune. And while that was not true or fair, he continued, it was a perception so widely distributed within Russia that it was not realistic to think that he or any 1990s-era billionaire could be popularly elected. Second, Khodorkovsky said, one of his parents was Jewish. There is no way with one Jewish parent I could ever get elected president. Still, he said, I am going to be very politically active. I have to be. This is my country. He sounded noble, but his ambition was clearly dangerous, since challenging Putin politically did not look like an easy matter, and it clearly violated the gentleman's agreement that generally prevailed between the Kremlin and the oligarchs. Khodorkovsky backed the Open Russia Foundation with Yukos funds to support civic and philanthropic projects. Less publicly, he contributed to political parties and to the coffers of individual members of the Duma. Soon, Khodorkovsky's lobbyists were seen working the floor of the Duma, relaying instructions to their allies at voting time. His audacity extended to Washington. Khodorkovsky donated $1 million to the Library of Congress in 2002. Separately, he worked Republican circles and won an invitation to Table 1 at the National Prayer Breakfast, which President Bush attended. As in Russia, he advertised himself to the Bush administration as a transformational figure. He traveled to Washington with a PowerPoint lecture outlining how Yukos could improve America's security as an oil importer. His presentation was entitled Russia, the Persian Gulf, and World Oil Supply. Its thrust was that private oil companies in Russia, led by Yukos, could build a new network of pipelines to export more Russian oil to the United States and China, reducing dependency on unstable oil exporters in the Middle East. One of the slides forecasted that Russian exports of crude oil could more than double to 6 million barrels per day by 2010, out of total production of more than 9 million barrels per day. The forecast proved to be accurate. Khodorkovsky believed that Russia should build new export systems. Lukoil and other privatized Russian companies had already drawn up plans for a new pipeline that would run north to the Russian port of Murmansk, just to the east of northern Finland, on the Barents Sea. Murmansk was free of ice year-round, and while the seas in the region could turn rough, they were navigable by the largest oil tankers. From Murmansk, oil can be transported from Russia to the U.S., by a shorter route than the one used for transporting crude from the Middle East, one of Khodorkovsky's slides declared. Russia could eventually supply 10% or more of American oil imports and serve Europe reliably, too. The geopolitical imperative for today is to diversify energy sources and concentrate on the most reliable ones, the presentation declared. Given the liquid, interconnected nature of global oil markets, it was not obvious why a Murmansk route would specifically benefit the United States over the long run, other than, perhaps, by providing an additional hedge against supply disruptions elsewhere. But the notion that direct imports by the United States from Russia would bolster geostrategic cooperation took hold at the highest levels of both governments, even among some officials who understood the fungible character of global oil markets. And Khodorkovsky emerged as the most active proponent of this vision in Russia's private sector. Khodorkovsky and Miss Amor believed their Murmansk vision enjoyed the full support of both the Putin and the Bush administrations. Sandy Vershbo, the American ambassador in Moscow, met regularly with Miss Amor and encouraged him. Privately, Vershbo was ambivalent. He called Khodorkovsky sometimes defensive and even threatening after a private meeting in Moscow in the fall of 2002, where they argued about what sort of contracts should govern future tie-ups between American and Russian oil companies. Yet Vershbo, Vice President Cheney, and others in the Bush administration recognized that Yukos, under Khodorkovsky, was one of a handful of Russian oil companies that might be in a position to make a transformational deal. On trips to Washington, Miss Amor met with senior officials on Bush's National Security Council. "They were quite happy to have the diversity of supply," he recalled, "with a rising role for Russia, so as to move away from the Persian Gulf dependency. The economics made a lot of sense, because to the extent that you didn't have higher shipping cost, that could be translated through in the costs of crude oil to the U.S. There was a great deal of support." It seemed increasingly uncertain, however, where Vladimir Putin really stood on the proposed American oil partnership. Putin thought about the security of energy supply much more as a risk game player than did the free market idealists in the Bush administration. He saw oil and gas pipelines as physical valves that he could open or shut as he sought to reward or punish other countries, at least within the former Soviet Union. Russian gas companies and ministries routinely squeezed supplies to customers in Ukraine if they were unhappy about regional finances. Surely, Putin was complicit in those squeeze plays.